from deep inside your radio.
Oh, it is so good to be back in the friendly confines of the Lachaudome. Man, every cockroach-infested nook and cranny just looks so good right now after a week. Now, Boston is busting its buttons right now. They're very proud that they pulled off what they and most observers who don't care about issues think of as a very successful Democratic National Convention. By the way, among the accomplishments, the Democrats succeeded in rebranding the convention. We call it the Democratic National Convention because historically that's what the event is known as. But whether it was when you entered the Fleet Center arena, whether you looked at the flashing electronic signs around the arena, or whether you looked at the really interesting, almost presidential seal that was on the podium at the convention, you saw that the event, in fact, had a different name. Now, my first experience with the rebranding, renaming of events came when I first went to the Richard Nixon Birthplace and Library and found that the custodians, the librarians, went through a kind of a festival of renaming the historic events in Richard Nixon's life. So, for example, what everybody back then knew as the Checkers speech, the speech he gave when he was trying to avoid getting kicked off the ticket by Dwight Eisenhower, because he told a story about a little dog named Checkers. We decided we would keep him. That's not the Checkers speech at the Nixon Library. It's the Fund Crisis speech. Similarly, the Kennedy-Nixon debates in 1960 are known at the Nixon Library as the Nixon-Kennedy debates. Anyway, this event was known as, at least the proprietors of it, as America 2004, the Democratic Convention. National seems so, you know, old-fashioned. And America had to be given top billing because, what? It's the home field. Anyway, Boston is very proud. People had good things to say about it, mainly because it was clouded over for most of the week, and therefore the hideous summer heat was not apparent. The one thing that wasn't really mentioned, I guess, because while we were there, we still had to make nice. Boston's cab drivers. I'll tell you, if you can find an alternative form of transportation, take it. Because I haven't been in as many, either in or around, as many arguments with cab drivers ever in my life. If they're not arguing with their passengers, they're stopping while the meter's running to argue with other cab drivers. That's acute. There will be much more about this past week because I know you may be sick of it, but so am I. And this is my opportunity to get it out of my system. Hello, welcome to the show.
You said something before you left, something I was not to forget. Then is when I maybe should have wrote it down, but when I looked around to find a pen, and then I tried to think of what you said. We broke into, busted through you, broke into. Busted through you.
from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you, welcoming me. I'm welcoming me back to another edition of the show. And from the top of the news, from across the pond, this may go so far to explain what's wrong, ladies and gentlemen. This may go so far to explain why things are the way they are. Research to be published this week by academics at University College London has found that those who even drink only one glass of wine a week have significantly sharper thought processes than teetotalers. That's right, George W. Bush is the guy who quit drinking. The benefits of alcohol, which are thought to be linked to its effect on the flow of blood to the brain, can be detected when a person drinks up to about four or five bottles of wine a week. The researchers were unable to test the effect of higher levels of alcohol consumption. They don't say why. Although drunkenness probably negates any positive effect on the brain. The findings have surprised health officials. The latest findings are drawn from a study of the long-term health of 10,000 British civil servants. Bureaucrats are good for something. Known as the Whitehall Study, it was originally set up in 1967 to identify links between health and factors ranging from smoking and obesity to age and social status. These latest tests involved psychometric testing of more than 6,000 civil servants, ranging from verbal and mathematical reasoning problems to tests of short-term memory. Their performance was then matched with their drinking habits. The study took into account all alcohol, wasn't specific to wine. The study showed that those having even a single glass of wine a week scored significantly higher than abstemious folks. Teetotalers were twice as likely as occasional drinkers to achieve the lowest scores. The benefits were most marked among women. Give me some wine, please. The benefits were most marked among women drinkers and showed no sign of flattening out with increasing consumption, to the researcher's surprise. Those who downed the equivalent of half a bottle of wine or two pints of beer a day scored best of all. These were true even when the adjustments were made to take into account factors such as physical and mental health. Our results seem to suggest some specificity in the association between alcohol consumption and cognitive ability. Frequent drinking may be more beneficial than drinking only on special occasions. The findings are being reported in the American Journal of Epidemiology. The results suggest that alcohol can reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease and increase blood flow to the brain. Women might benefit more because of the different way in which they metabolize alcohol. Have some more, honey. So, as I say, this may explain everything. Might want to get the president off the wagon. Might be the best thing for all of us. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I am going to wax instantly nostalgic on the events of the past week. Some of you may have heard some of my yakking on the public radio broadcast to the point, but some of you haven't. And no matter what, I'm going to talk about some other things too, but the most peculiar thing of being in a place like that, and there were a lot of peculiar things about it. I was at the Democratic Convention in Boston, ladies and gentlemen, as a spoofer. But you are talk about living in a media bubble in the United States of America for the last couple of years. You're in a bubble in a bubble. You're double bubbled when you're at a place like that. Now, the good thing is that for news junkies like myself, they deliver a plenitude of major newspapers, major and minor newspapers for that matter, to the front door of your hotel, to the door of your hotel room every day for free. Reason enough, you know, to learn how to use an escape hood respirator. By the way, speaking of which, there were reports prior to the, you know, all sorts of scare reports, as there are now about New York. But, you know, the ones about New York, I believe. The reports prior to Boston suggested that the Secret Service had urged journalists to bring escape hood respirators to Boston. And reports were that some news organizations, including the New York Times and Knight Ridder newspapers, had their journalists and everybody that was going to be in Boston go through a day of training to cope with any emergency that might result. Special training by a company called Centurion. And some of them actually brought escape hood respirators with them to Boston. Now, I was convinced enough by the scare stories that I went to the websites. I Googled escape hood respirators, what I did, and went to the websites of people who make them. And they're not that expensive, and they're not that bulky. And I thought, But like so much you do in life, I just, that was the end of it. Was the last, very last thought I had on the subject, until I read on the plane back that the reporters who did go past and bring their escape hood respirators with them to Boston had them confiscated by security as they tried to enter the arena. So thank goodness they weren't that expensive. Anyway, we were all inside. You're reading all these newspapers. And, of course, all they're writing about is the non-event that you're all attending together. You're reading them. They're giving them to you for free so you can read them to see if they said something pithier than you did. So, of course, certain things went unnoticed, at least when I checked every newspaper that was plopped outside my hotel door. For example, the British government's handling of the war on terror received a damning appraisal from senior members of parliament, including members of Tony Blair's own party, who warned that a year after the invasion, Iraq is in danger of turning into a failed state and Afghanistan could implode. The Foreign Affairs Committee of the British Parliament reported there was little, if any, sign of the much-heralded war on drugs being won under the new Afghan regime. There's a major report analyzing the British government's foreign policy in relation to the war on terror. The committee warned that the coalition's failure to bring law and order to parts of Iraq created a vacuum into which criminal elements and militias have stepped. Afghanistan is now, quote, absolutely on the knife edge, unquote, especially in light of the decision of Doctors Without Borders to pull out after 25 years in the war-torn state. That was another story that I don't think quite made it into the bubble. It's already suspended most of its work at Doctors Without Borders after killings in June and recalled all foreign staff to the capital. Today's context is rendering independent humanitarian aid for the Afghan people all but impossible, the international group said in a statement. They were there during the war with the Soviets, during the war with the Taliban, but they're gone. The clock is ticking, said a conservative member of the Parliament Foreign Affairs Committee. The committee's chairman, presumably a Labour member, same party as Tony Blair, warned, quote, Iraq could go either way, unquote. The report says it is disappointing other countries have not committed troops to Iraq, no kidding, but Iraq is now in danger of becoming a failed state, adding to regional instability. The failure to meet Iraqi expectations, they warn, risks damaging the credibility of the United Kingdom in Iraq and Iraqi goodwill towards it. It recommends as a first step setting targets for water and electricity provision in Iraq. The report criticizes fine communiques and ringing declarations on Afghanistan while warning that its current status is a fragile state in one of the most sensitive and regional volatile regions of the world, which could implode with terrible consequences. So that's the Chief Foreign Affairs Committee of the British Parliament. Saying that the failure of other countries to send failure of countries other than the U.S. and U.K. to send significant numbers of armed personnel to Iraq. I thought we had a whole 30-country coalition. They say it has produced serious and regrettable consequences and that the U.K. government should make renewed efforts to persuade other countries, including Islamic nations, to send troops. Also not reported this week when that idea was floated by Colin Powell and Saudi Arabia, the head of the Arab League, got right up and said, in no uncertain terms, no Arab nation is going to send troops to Iraq until the United States troops are gone. Because why would they want to have their troops there to get shot at for being puppets of the Americans? That's what he said. You remember Lakhdar Brahimi? He was the guy brought in by the United Nations to try to select the interim government running Iraq before he was elbowed aside. Maybe his grapes aren't the sweetest right now. He charges in an interview published in Austria, carried by a French news service, French, that the U.S.-led invasion has been a mistake and has brought terrorism to Iraq. Quote, the war in Iraq was useless, it caused more problems than it solved, and it brought in terrorism. Iraq could eventually become a normal country, he said, but the question is how long will that take and how much will it cost? So far, the cost has been very high. He says the current interim government faces a challenge in proving it's not a puppet of the Americans, quote, which is difficult to do when there are 150,000 foreign soldiers in the country, unquote. But it is a new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen. This also didn't make the papers here. The new prime minister, the tough guy, Ayad Alawi, has established a media committee to impose restrictions on print and broadcast media. The step underlines an aggressive new attitude towards press freedoms. The restrictions, known as red lines, are yet to be finalized, but include unwarranted criticism of the prime minister. He singled out last Friday's sermon by the firebrand Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, who called the prime minister America's tail. That would be outlawed, you see. Outlets that broadcast the sermon could be banned. Could still deliver the sermon, you just couldn't report it. This would appear, says a British newspaper, to mark a step back. This would appear to mark a step back from Washington's democratic vision for post-war Iraq. Yes, it would appear to be. Before the handover last month, U.S. officials boasted Iraq enjoyed the Arab world's least regulated media. Bremer, one of his first acts as U.S. administrator, was abolishing the information ministry. Now, Ibrahim Janabi, heading the new Higher Media Commission, said his committee would soon relocate to the old Information Ministry building. Many of the old Information Ministry's 5,000 former employees have welcomed his commission as a first step to regaining their jobs that were axed by Bremer. There's growing government nervousness that Arab satellite channels are giving publicity to Iraq's rebel groups. Iraq's foreign minister denounced Al Jazeera. In a difficult security situation, the foreign minister said, we need to fight the terrorists by all means, and one of the means is the media. We need them all to cooperate, even the private sector. Noting that Al Jazeera broadcast part of that sermon, he said, if they do it again, we will give them 2 weeks to correct the policy, and after that we will tell them, sorry, we need to close your office. The new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen. While we're there, this made some of the wires in this country. Halliburton has lost $18.6 million worth of government property in Iraq, about a third of the items it was given to manage, including trucks, computers, and office furniture. How do you lose a truck? Government auditors couldn't account for 7,000 of 20,000 items on the ledgers of Kellogg Brown and Root Unit of Halliburton, according to an auditor for the Coalition Provisional Authorities Inspector General. They just started the audit in April, even though the Coalition Provisional Authority is now no longer existful. This occurred because KBR did not effectively manage government property, the Inspector General wrote. Other news of protest. Speaking of which, there was a lot of talk about protests in Boston, preparations for protest, the cage that they built for protesters, the fact that the protesters wouldn't get in the cage. My favorite protest of the week was last Sunday the city seemed totally occupied by smiling Asian people in yellow T-shirts. And one figured out, even before reading their T-shirts, that these must be people from the Falun Gong, the religious sect that is being persecuted by the Chinese government. And my favorite protest poster was one being carried by them in Trinity Square Park in Boston, which said simply, without any explanation, Falun Dafa, and I don't know what that means. It's, I guess, some other version of Falun Gong or something that they do in Falun Gong. Here's what, I don't know. They didn't tell me. Here's what it said. Falun Dafa is good. So that's what I know. I don't know what it is, but it's good. Anyway, more news of protests. An Albuquerque attorney has gone to court to ask that a rally for Vice President Cheney be open to people of all political opinions. But a judge quickly turned her down. The dispute is that tickets to the Cheney rally from the Republicans' victory office in Albuquerque were available only if you signed a statement saying you supported President Bush's reelection. Republicans said the rally was a thank you to supporters. And like anyone giving a private celebration, the political party can limit the guest list to its friends. The private party is being held at a public school. Year Shi, a spokesman for the Republican National Committee in Washington, said that the rally was meant to reward and enthuse Burst Cheney supporters, not to be a forum to preach to skeptics. Democrats, independents, and others were welcome to attend the speech, he said, as long as they like Bush and Cheney. And people should understand that Cheney is visiting New Mexico in the role of a candidate for re-election, she said. The argument that you're an American and you have a right to see the vice president, you can when he comes to New Mexico on an official visit, she said. She's the name of the guy. On this visit, he's Dick Cheney, a candidate for vice president, and he happens also to be the vice president. What? Did I read that right? He's Dick Cheney, a candidate for vice president, and he happens to also be the vice president. So that's what he happens to be. U.S. authorities in Baghdad spent hundreds of millions of Iraqi dollars without keeping good enough records to show whether they got some services and products they paid for, according to government investigators. What else is new, department? But the remarkable thing is that a committee of the British Parliament chaired, majority membership by members of Tony Blair's own Labour Party, delivered that one would think, kind of startling, kind of downbeat at least, view of the war. And that didn't penetrate to our little world in Boston, where all the talk about the Iraq War was, well, you know, how much it's costing Americans, and can we bring the American troops home? My anger at my rancor at the anger of the cab drivers didn't extend to I had a opportunity to take one limo ride, and the driver was very generous with his knowledge of Boston history. See those state police, he said. Boston has state police, and during the convention we only saw them in their SWAT uniforms, but now they have regular uniforms, which I never saw. He said with some pride, you know, Hitler took his uniforms from the Massachusetts State Police. When he was trying to figure out how his soldiers should look, he modeled them on the Massachusetts State Police. I'm telling you, Boston is busting its buttons.
Hear the sledges with the bells, silver bells. What a world of merry men, their melody foretells. How they tinkle, tinkle, tinkle in the icy air of night. All the heavens seem to twinkle with a crystalline delight. Keeping time, time, time with a sort of runic rhyme. With the tintinabulation that so musically wells. From the bells, 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 bells.
from the jingling and the tinkling of the bells. Hear the mellow wedding bells, golden bells. What a world of happiness their harmony foretells. Through the balmy air of night, how they ring out their delight. Through the dances and the yells and the rapture that impels. How it swells, how it dwells on the future, how it tells. With the swinging and the ringing of the golden, golden bells. Of the bells, 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 bells. Of the rhyming and the chiming of the bells. Hear the loud alarm bells, brazen bells. What a tale of terror now their turbulency tells. Much too horrified to speak. Oh, they can only shriek for all the ears to know how the danger ebbs and flows. Leaping higher, higher, higher in a desperate desire, in a clamorous appealing to the mercy of the fire. But the bells, 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 with the clamor and the clanging of the bells. Tolling of the bells, iron bells. What a world of solemn thought their monody compels. For all the sound that floats from the rust within our throats, and the people sit and groan in their muffled monotone. And the tolling, tolling, tolling fields of glory in the rolling, from the throbbing and the sobbing of the melancholy bells. Of the bells, 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 of the moaning and the groaning of the bells. Hear the sledges with the bells, silver bells. What a world of merry men their melody foretells. How they tinkle, tinkle, tinkle in the icy air of night. All the heavens seem to twinkle with a crystalline delight. Keeping time, time, time with a sort of runic rhyme. With the tinted adulation that so musically wells. From the bells, 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 from the jingling and the tinkling of the bells.
This is Le Show, and you know that in the wake of the convention, neither party rested on its August laurels. President Bush was out on the campaign trail the day after the convention, along with Dick Cheney, who's running for vice president, also happens to be vice president. John Kerry and John Edwards got on a bus. They're bus people, ladies and gentlemen, and started touring so-called battleground states. But as I say, President Bush unveiled his new, at least new to me, slogan in the first couple of campaign stops. We're turning the corner, or we've turned the corner, he said it both ways, and we're not turning back.
Campaigning Eagle.
Hey, 43, nice opening salvo on the dams.
41, yeah. You like that line? We're turning the corner and we're not turning back. It really gives you the feeling of forward movement, doesn't it?
Yeah, just like looking at a 58 caddy standing still. I have to admit, putting my Lee Atwater hat on, thought that if the carry operation is smart, you've kind of given them a good opening. Sure, we've turned the corner from jobs to joblessness, from peace to war, et cetera, et cetera.
If the carry operation is smart, big if, El Padrino. They still haven't figured out how to get him out of the Iraq trap.
Because he voted for the war.
And because we spent $85 million this spring branding him as a flip-flopper. I mean, if he really turns against the war, flip friggin' flop. I think Karl Rove really has our opponent's cojones in a baggie on that one.
Well, He could say the vote was a mistake and the war was a mistake.
He doesn't believe it.
Well, but he could say it. You could say it.
I don't believe it. You know, unlike some folks in politics, 41, I have to believe what I say.
Oh, sure, that's the reason for the whole nuance control operation in-house.
That's right.
Still, Sprout, it's not too late. You know, saying the M word frees you to take a new look at the whole deal. You know, you cut the legs right out from under your opponent because our, well, for one thing, our European friends will tend to get a whole lot friendlier as soon as they hear you say the M word.
Oh, yeah, I bet the Frenchies would bake up a whole bag full of bagels or baguettos or something if I did that.
Well,
look, 41, the only mistake in all this is that you didn't do it. You know, I've forgiven you for that. No need for a sullen countenance. The slate's clean. We've turned the corner.
And we're not turning back. Yeah. Hey, 43.
Yeah?
Used to your lording it over me about you being the one to topple Saddam.
Facts are facts, El Padrino.
But really don't like having your campaign slogans show up in personal conversation like that.
Yeah. You're right, 41. I'm sorry. Force a habit.
You've only been campaigning for a day.
Yeah. Week of practice.
Thought Kerry did pretty well Thursday night.
Oh, he was fine, but, you know, Dick Cheney's going to cut the Breck girl into pieces. Mm-hmm. He's going to masticulate him, you know. I mean, 41, did you see Pretty Boy Floyd squinting all through his speech? Didn't that make you trust lawyers just a little bit more? And for pity's sake, you know, his hair?
Too shiny for leadership.
41, I haven't seen a Parton look that fake since the Red Sea attraction at Babylon Theme Park.
You sound confident.
Hey, first couple of appearances after the break, you know, the crowds were eating me up.
But not masticulating you.
Nah, security wouldn't let him. Hmm. Hey, how about that Al Sharpton talking straight to me, you know, as if I'm watching their convention.
So you saw it?
No, it made the presidential daily highlight reel. Tell you something, every time I hear that fella speaking, I just want to go take a lozenge.
Well, 43, working on my speech for your convention.
Yeah, okay, 41, I don't know if Carl or Karen or anyone has passed this along yet, so I might as well ask you.
Yeah. What's that, Sprout?
Well, when you deliver your speech, mm-hmm. would you mind doing it in your Navy uniform? Sure would help me out there.
Gonna think about it. Yeah. Don't know if it fits. Last time wore it was to the Weinberger pardon celebration.
Okay, 41. Go catch me a bonefish, will you?
You got it, 43.
Tell Mom I say hi.
She knows it. Be careful out there.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, The Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
This is a famous one already. The producer of the Democratic National Convention in Boston deeply apologized on Friday for his exasperated, profanity-laced tirade, which went on worldwide TV just as John Kerry ended his acceptance speech. I feel terrible about it, and I deeply apologize to anyone I might have offended, Don Mischer told the Los Angeles dog trainer. CNN had received permission from Mischer to air audio from the control room from time to time to provide behind-the-scenes flavor. I guess just a little too much flavor. Mischer had no idea his control room comments were being broadcast at the time. He said, "Jesus, we need more balloons. I want all balloons to go. God bless it. What the F are you guys doing up there? We want more balloons coming down. More balloons, more balloons, more balloons," he said. CNN can't be fined by the F-word CC, but they issued an apology as well. Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack apologized to Hispanic Democrats for a law declaring English the state's official language, saying the issue nearly made him decide not to seek re-election. He signed the bill 2 years ago, but the issue resurfaced when he was being vetted as John Kerry's possible running mate. He told the Latino caucus at the DNC that he opposed the bill. "I brought my staff into the office and said, I'm not going to sign this legislation because I don't think it's right." They said, Governor, you're facing re-election and 80% of the public thinks this is a good idea. I said, well, maybe I should just simply not run for office. It's one of those difficult situations that governors find themselves in. Largely symbolic, the law made English the state's official language, and that all government proceedings be conducted in English. I'm here to apologize personally today and for the people of my state, Vilsack said. It is a bad law. Dateline Cincinnati, a WLWT online editor, acknowledged he was fired after a paragraph belittling one of the station's reporters, Reagan Butler, was inserted into a story on the station's website. The former online editor, Dave Thomas, not any of the ones you've heard of, said he didn't write the comment but did accidentally place it in the story. He said he has attempted to contact Butler to apologize. This was at the bottom of a crime story about a Portsmouth, Ohio woman named Powell. The last paragraph read, investigators are not sure if Powell died, where her body was found, or if she was killed elsewhere. WLWT Eyewitness News 5's most overrated, obnoxious, annoying, stick-like, hoe-bag, sperm receptacle staff member Reagan Butler reported. It's an accident, putting that in. The U.S.-based international lingerie manufacturer Victoria's Secret has withdrawn their Buddha print two-piece bikinis and apologized after a garment created a furor on the predominantly Buddhist island of Sri Lanka. Following a Buddhist monk's complaint demanding the ban of the bikinis, candles in the shape of the Buddha, and Buddha bar albums with pictures of the Buddha, the Supreme Court of Sri Lanka last month ordered a strict enforcement of laws prohibiting use of religious symbols for commercial use. Victoria's Secret made a written apology after Sri Lanka protested against the use of Buddha images for the company's swimwear. They had no intention of showing any disrespect. That's why they put him there. The poster portrayed a passenger surrounded by charcuterie. Poster warning about the problems of smelly food on London Underground is being pulled, that's the London subway, after it sparked a complaint from the Italian ambassador. He told bosses of the subway system, the poster of a passenger surrounded by salami and parma ham depicted Italians in a derogatory way. A London Underground spokesman said the poster was meant to be lighthearted. He apologized for any offense to members of the Italian community and charcuterie manufacturers and retailers. A senior official with Iraq's interior ministry says the Iranian population has grown rapidly in southern Iraq. Why would that be? How could that have happened? What would be the motive of that? Who would be benefiting from all this? Especially in the holy cities of Karbala and Najaf, and that Iraqi intelligence has detected the presence of Iranian security forces there. Why would that be? How could that possibly? The senior official said that thousands of militiamen trained and funded by Iran are operating throughout southern Iraq. This week, Iraq's defense minister blamed Tehran for the majority of terrorist attacks that have been carried out, but Wednesday, Prime Minister Ayad Alawi publicly apologized, saying that the defense minister was not allowed to make such a statement. And I guess we're not allowed to report it. The Egyptian diplomat who was held hostage was released by captors who apologized and gave him gifts when they freed him. Apology, ladies and gentlemen. Dateline, Florida, an embarrassed state Republican Party apologized for a GOP campaign brochure that urged voters to use absentee ballots, thus undermining efforts by GOP Governor Jeb Bush to inspire confidence in the new touchscreen voting machines. Critics said it was a sign that maybe Republican leaders also questioned the reliability of the touchscreen systems. Bush and many GOP legislators have been saying for weeks the machines are accurate, even though the state lost some computer records. Found them this week. Found the CD-ROM. You know, these things happen. Said Republican Party spokesman Joseph Angostini, we regret any misunderstanding over this issue. We are confident of Florida's election system. We'll check back with him on that. And also in Florida, Mayor Jeff Perlman of Delray Beach apologized for the city's public information officer allegedly referring to Haitian Creole language as bastardized. I'm deeply sorry and formally apologize to all those who rightfully took offense. Those kind of derogatory statements, if made, whether made in jest by mistake or deliberately, run counter to the values of our city and will not be condoned or tolerated. If. I guess the values of their city don't go to finding out whether statements were made before you apologize for them. But those, ladies and gentlemen, are the apologies of the week. It was a week where people vied with each other to try to find the proper metaphor for what was going on in Boston. The cliche, of course, was an infomercial. But that's wrong-headed, because most infomercials last, at the most, half an hour. And what they're faking is excitement. Well, this excitement was real, such as it was. But I realized Thursday evening, I was there's a thing called a lockdown. I've experienced it twice in my life. Once when Frank Sinatra was entering a hotel and I was in a commissary backstage. And for 90 minutes, wherever you were, you couldn't move from that spot. I discovered that when a Las Vegas policeman who had been helping himself to a muffin or a donut or something found he couldn't get out of the commissary and back to his assigned post, because they were conducting a security sweep for Mr. Sinatra. Well, Thursday night at the convention, the fire marshal and the Secret Service locked down the entire Fleet Center about 8 o'clock in the evening. So for the next 3 hours, wherever you were, that's where you were going to be. That's where you were going to stay. And it didn't matter if you were, for example, in the hallway, in a stairwell, and were a delegate yelling, "I had to circulate petitions to get here." Or if you were from WGN-TV with a crew gang, "We have to do a live shot. We're supposed to be on live in there." It didn't make any difference. You were stuck. So I went and watched some of it at the press center on TV. Now, the wheels were really starting to come off Thursday, because these TV feed, the whole hall was wired for TV. All the delegations had TV sets at their sites, so that they didn't have to look up at the podium or, God forbid, at the giant TV screen over their heads. They could look at their own TV, because it was a TV show. But Thursday night, the widescreen TVs, which were not showing high-definition TV, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, they were showing regular TV pictures stretched. So we were watching the fat Democrat convention. And now Thursday, for some reason, the picture also goes fuzzy. So it was the fuzzy fat Democrat convention. And there was a sequence that, oddly enough, the networks didn't choose to show, which was people, normal average people from around the country, saying why they supported John Kerry. Some of them were live from other parts of the country. Some of them were in the arena. The whole thing, if you think the balloon drop, if Don Mischer thinks the balloon drop was a mess, he was directing this too. And everybody was missing their cues, were standing and looking bewildered. The camera was on them too long after they finished their little peroration, and they just looked around going, "Well, what do I do now, Mr. Thing?" And it suddenly occurred to me what this was. This was a telethon. This was a telethon. This was like with the guys from 7-Eleven come and talk to Jerry, and you just go, "Telethon, please help us wipe out the dread plague of republicanism." That was the telethon. Now, when you see these people being locked down, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, it's pretty amazing, because you have at a political convention, you have 18,000 people plus, all of whom are extremely important. I was talking to a woman who was guarding one of a staff entrance to the arena, and her whole job was to say, "Next entrance, please. Next entrance, please," to everybody coming by except staff, employees of the arena. And she said to me, "Everybody here thinks I'm saying, 'Next entrance, please,' but not you. You're special. You can come in." So when those people get locked down, "Oh, doctor, Katie, bar the door." The delegates were you know, those of us who were hanging around were sleep deprived. The delegates were incredibly sleep deprived. They would party till like 3 a.m. There were these amazing parties thrown by, you know, good-spirited, public-spirited citizens who just want to support the process, like the pharmaceutical, like every pharmaceutical company in the world and most of the insurance companies who threw this unbelievably elaborate party Tuesday night to say goodbye to Senator John Breaux of Louisiana. It's clear they're going to miss him. And nothing is quite so surreal as watching four different species of penguins walking stiffly around while Buckwheat Zydeco is playing on a stage right in front of them. So the delegates do these parties, and then they get up at 7 a.m. to do breakfasts, and then they go all day long, which would explain, you know, we know from Abu Ghraib that sleep deprivation is used as a control technique, and now we know some of the good things it can accomplish. But the point worth remembering about all this silliness, ladies and gentlemen, and the flow of money, one reason that people still like to have political conventions is because they are, I believe, the only place where lobbyists can still give unlimited amounts of money to politicians. It's a loophole in the campaign finance law. And, of course, the one reason that they need the money, and they do need the money, is to buy television commercials. So television, which profited greatly when we switched from basically conventions to primaries, because now the primary candidates all have to buy television to communicate with the voters, now walks away from the convention saying they're too dull because they're planned for television. And one of the reasons they're dull is because they have to raise money so that the parties can afford to buy commercials in the fall on television.
Listen here! I told you before! Just won't listen. I heard you twice the first time. I don't want to hear no more. Listen to me. I heard you twice the first time. I don't want to hear no more. Don't listen, don't listen. Wait a minute. Ooh. Tell me what to do each and every day. You don't ever listen to what I have to say. Talk about that. Now I'm gonna tell you just where is that. I heard you try the first time. I don't wanna hear no more. No, no. Listen to me. Don't listen, don't listen, don't listen. I heard you try the first time. I don't wanna hear no more. And what you do each and every day. You don't ever listen to what I have to say. You talk about this, yeah, and you talk about that. Now I'm gonna tell you just where is that. Ow! Don't wanna hear no more. Wait a minute here. I heard you try the first time. Don't wanna hear no more. No! Look here. You tell me what to do each and every day. You don't ever listen to what I have to say. Ow! You talk about this, yeah, and you talk about that. Now I'm gonna tell you where is that. Listen. Listen to me. Just won't listen, won't listen. Ow! called you twice the first time. I don't want to hear no more. No. Wait a minute. You tell me what to do each and every day. You don't ever listen to what I have to say. You talk about this, yeah, and you talk about that. Now I'm gonna tell you just where's that. Don't listen, don't listen. I don't wanna hear no more.
Wow, look at those penguins boogie. Ladies and gentlemen, one final note on this wacky week. While the United States was loosening sanctions and eventually reestablishing diplomatic ties with Libya, they're now our friends. Bush administration acknowledged this week it had information last spring about a Libyan plot to assassinate the leader of Saudi Arabia. Isn't that nutty? And you know, one of the things that everybody noticed about Boston was how friendly the police were. And they certainly were. They were friendly, good-natured all week long. And why wouldn't they be? The presence of the Democratic Convention in Boston was the lever that enabled them, with a strike threatened right up to the opening of the convention and picketing of the state delegations being threatened, it enabled them to get double what they would have gotten without the convention being there. I'd be friendly, too. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available whenever you want it. And now available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow. And it would be just like turning the corner and turning back again if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks. Le Show playlists, incessantly available at the newly refurbished harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. And no, there are no cockroaches in the Le Show Dome.